Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. It's Peter Matthews, and I'm here today with Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. And just want to, again, thank everybody for listening. The numbers have been great for the show. And if you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, please do send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Any suggestions or comments are always welcomed as well. Good afternoon, Chief. How are you today?
Hi, Pete. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good, good. We'll get into the first question here. It comes from a firefighter in a combination department. It says, I work full-time for a combination fire department. The challenge that I am facing involves communications along with my full-time coworkers, especially at shift change. Most of the time, the new shift coming on duty has no idea what the off-going shift did or what their issues were for that day. Essentially, there's no passing of the baton from one shift to each other. What can we do to improve the avenues of communications between our shifts and the department in general?
Okay. I'm going to make an assumption here that he's talking about the communications in a single station versus multiple stations and how they communicate across stations. It sounds like what he's describing is a situation where the off-going shift and the oncoming shift don't have much interaction, and therefore there's missing information that is maybe hampering the ability of the oncoming shift to do the best job that they can. And maybe some examples like that would be a piece of equipment that went out of service, or something that was going to be scheduled for maintenance that day that was scheduled the previous day that isn't being shared with the oncoming shift. And I could see where that could lead to some frustration among the shift that has to then deal with these surprises that come about that maybe the previous shift had known about. So I think the first thing that comes to my mind and how to deal with this is to ask, why is this happening? You got a group of firefighters going off duty and a group of firefighters coming on duty, and assuming at some point they have to physically pass each other in the station, if it's going in and out the door or across the apparatus bay floor or something there. So why is it happening that they're not having communication? And as I gave some thought to some of the possibilities, a few things came to mind. One is that they don't see the value in it. In other words, they're not aware that by not sharing this information that it's having some consequence on that shift. So say, for example, the shift that's off going, when they get relieved, they're getting good information, so they never have these surprises and issues and frustrations throughout the day. But when their shift ends, they're not sharing it with the next shift, so they're not really aware that what they're not sharing or not communicating is causing some problems. Another possibility is that they're just complacent or disinterested in seeing the department run efficiently and effectively. In other words, my shift ends at 7 a.m. or my shift ends at 8 a.m. and whatever happens on the next day or 2 days or until I have to come back is not my concern, and I don't really care. And when I come back in, I'll pick it up and do my job for that 24-hour period, and or however long the shift is, and leave again, and not worry about it till I come back again. So maybe an issue of complacency or just a disinterest in how what they're doing affects the next shift. Another possibility is there may be some personality conflicts between people from one shift to the next, from supervisor to supervisor, or staff person to staff person, but there may be some reason that they're choosing not to communicate with each other. You know, there's some issue there that I'm unaware of, but that's a possibility. Another possibility is that the supervisor who's not communicating may simply be a poor communicator. This may be the kind of person that if you were to be able to secretly poll their friends or their significant other or their kids, you might hear the same complaint that the person doesn't communicate well to them as well. So it may not be you or you know, what the folks on your shift. It may be that this person just doesn't have a good communications skill set to be able to talk when the shift ends. And if that's the case, it should display itself in other aspects of that person's communications throughout the course of doing their job and just not at shift change. Another possibility is it may be a power thing. You know, there's some truth in the fact that there is power in information, and those who have it possess a certain amount of power over those who don't. And they may be thinking, if we know something you don't know, it makes us more valuable or more important to the organization, or we'll look better if you guys screw up because you didn't know something that we knew. So you could have some of that ego and rivalry intermixing into what's happening. So there's I don't know what counting it, but 5 or 6 possible explanations as to why it's happening. what can be done about it? And I think that's probably as important as understanding why. I think that one of the things that the supervisor who is frustrated with this situation could do is first talk with the supervisor who is running the off-going shift and help them understand how the lack of communications is affecting the things that are happening on the next shift. And I would try to be very explicit with examples. When I met with them, I'd say, you know, for example, the engine 1 was scheduled to go in for maintenance, and the maintenance garage told us they called and scheduled it on your shift, and that you guys knew about this, and then we didn't, and we had some training planned, and you know, it goofed up the training because we didn't know that engine 1 was going in for maintenance. And just have some examples instead of just saying it's causing us problems. When you're able to put it into context of here is how it's causing us problems, here's some examples, then you try to get them to have some understanding, some empathy about how it's affecting your shift. And what you might find out is they didn't know. They might say, oh, I never really crossed my mind that you needed to know these things, or I didn't realize or think about how it would affect you. Thanks for bringing that to my attention, and you know, I'll work harder to make sure you know about these things. Now, that might be a kind of idealistic kind of answer, but you never know until you talk to them that that they would know that it's causing problems. I think all too often people assume, well, they got to know it's causing problems. You know, they got to know that when they do this, it causes this issue or that issue. And I'm not sure that I agree with that. You know, sometimes a person can have horrifically bad breath and not know it, and their nose is only, you know, an inch from their mouth of where this bad breath is coming from. So you'd say, man, if I can smell your breath 3 feet away, you got to know you got bad breath. No, not necessarily. Until somebody points it out that there's a problem, and you say, really? Okay, well, you know, now that I know about it, I can do something about it. So I think we could do well to not assume that this person is doing this on purpose and they know it's causing a problem and they know it, the impact that it's making. I would start with being kind of taking a naive approach and saying, maybe this person doesn't know, so I'm going to make it my role to try to educate them about what is happening and how it's affecting the things that are happening on their shift. Another thing I might do is talk to the supervisor who relieves this person. So I don't start to get into this too confusing here. Let's just say these are A, B, and C shift. And let's just say that the person I'm on the C shift, the person I'm having the problem with is on the B shift. And I would go and talk to the person who's on the A shift, who is relieving or is being relieved by this person I'm having a problem with, and ask them, you know, when you swap shifts from A shift to B shift, how do you guys communicate? You know, what do you say? What do you share? What information? And find out what they do. And that person might say, well, you know, what I do is I make sure that I have. That I talk to them face to face and tell them things that are going on, and they say, "Oh, okay. Well, they're you're giving them the benefit of the briefing that I'm not getting." If that's happening, then you've got some good ammunition to go talk to the B shift person about how they're getting treated when they're getting relief from the A shift. What else might happen is the A shift person might say, "You know, I don't really share a whole lot with them. I don't say a whole lot to them. I just shift change. They go their way, or they're coming in, and we're going our way." And if that's the case, then what you might find out is the B shift officer might be thinking, you know what, the A shift person doesn't tell me crap, so I'm not going to tell the next person crap. If I got to have my day ruined with information that isn't being shared at shift change, well then the next person has to suffer just as equally as I have suffered, and so the world goes around. And so then that paints up a different opportunity. So after I did a little bit of investigative work, I might ask to have a meeting among the supervisors of all three of the shifts, where the three of you could sit down in an informal setting, over coffee or whatever, and say, you know what, here's an opportunity for us. And doing a little bit of investigative work, I've come to realize that something that has been causing me some frustration has also been causing you guys some frustration, and there's an opportunity for all of us to do a little bit better and make our jobs a little easier when we come to work. And that's in the area of communications when we're doing shift change. And just open up some dialogue and get them to talk about how they're feeling and what they think the solution should be. I'd try not to come into the room with saying, here's the problem and here's the answer and this is what you guys are going to do. Rather saying, here is what I perceive to be some of the challenges that I'm facing. How do you, you guys feeling the same thing? Are you having the same challenges? And if you're not, what advice do you have for me about how to work through this? But if you are having the same challenges, maybe we all could come up with a system that could benefit all of us, that we could do better at communication on shift change. And then maybe if you get them to agree that there is a common problem among the shifts, discuss what information would be most beneficial for us to share when we have a shift change. Now, obviously, you can't talk about everything that happened for a full 24 hours, especially if you're in a busy firehouse. And I don't think they need to have chapter and verse about every medical call or every fire call, but there's probably some things that are pretty important to get shared. And what are those things? And talk among themselves about, okay, minimally, what are the things that we'd want to know when we're coming on about what has happened in the last 24 or 48 hours, because some things are going to get passed, along for two shifts. A shift tells B shift something, who then shares it with C shift if they're communicating well. So some of these things will get communicated, across all three shifts or however many shifts that you have. And then discuss a way to best ensure that information gets passed. Okay, we've made a short list of the things that we want to make sure it gets passed. What's the best way to make sure that this happens? How can we do that? And there's some options that come to mind to me is, and the quickest and easiest would probably be a verbal report. Just simply, you know, we have 5 minutes of face-to-face discussion at the shift change to say, what do I need to know? Now, assuming, again, back that you're not dealing with the a complacent or disinterested person who would say, yeah, you don't need to know nothing, it's all good, and out the door they go, because that's a whole other problem if that's the case. But assuming we get some genuine buy-in, then to improving communications, then we would have a verbal report that would include, you know, a 5-minute summary about what have happened, what's the most important things I need to know. You know, maybe it's some street closures, maybe it's some equipment that's out of service, or a vendor's going to be coming to the station to do some maintenance for the day, and you need to know to let them in, or well, whatever it is. You know, it's the report of what they need to know. So one way is to do it verbally. Another way would be to do a written report, although I'm not particularly in favor of the written report because not everyone is, you know, articulate writers, and sometimes when a person puts something in writing and you read it, it's too easy to be misconstrued as to what was being meant with what the person was writing. And so they might write one thing, and you might read it in as to mean something completely different. So although that is one option, it's not probably not the best. Another one is, and I've seen a few places that have done this, is to keep a log, a daily log, in their watch office or dispatch office of incidents and activities throughout the day. So if you know, if something happens, they put an entry in the log, and again, this is back to being in writing, but it's not more of a formal report, it's just a log of daily activity. And they might log every call that they go on and the addresses they go on and maybe a brief summary of what the problem was. So, you know, I come in at the beginning of the shift and I open up the log and I see, you know, they were at the XYZ company 3 times yesterday for a faulty fire alarm. Well, that might be good for me to know if I'm going to get another fire alarm to the XYZ company here this morning, that that there's some history there of things that I could benefit from knowing about, and how we respond to the incident. We might choose to go routine instead of emergency, or change something up if we had the, you know, information that there was some problems. Or maybe a company called and said they were going to be testing the alarms at a particular company the next day, and that's something that could go into the logbook that would help the oncoming supervisor, you know to expect that for the day. Another option is maybe to rely on someone whose work schedule transcends the shifts. In other words, if you have A, B, and C shifts, maybe you have somebody who works a 40-hour week who is there across the shifts. They work, you know, 8 hours on the A shift, 8 hours on the B, 8 hours on the C, and then back to 8 hours on the A shift. And so they get a chance to have interaction with all the shifts. Now, who might this person be? It could be in a small department. It could be the chief of the department. It could be the assistant chief. It could be a fire inspector. It could be a day shift firefighter that's maybe hired just to work a 40-hour week. Somebody who just can carry the message consistently across shift to shift. So it's just another option there. If you find that you're still struggling with getting folks to be good communicators, then you might look at offering up some training, although it probably wouldn't have to be a very extensive program, about how to be a better communicator of information across shifts. If you have somebody who's good at that kind of communication, maybe have them mentor and work with the person who's you know, struggling with that skill set, and maybe offer some coaching to them about how to ensure that they're carrying a consistent, regular message. One last thing that comes to mind is it might not be a bad idea if there was something that was passed. You know, the writer had said something like pass the baton from one shift to the other. Well, you know, from Fat Track and Field, you know, the baton is passed in the relay. But in the fire station, you know, is there something that could be passed from shift to shift? Is there keys or a cell phone for the supervisor or a pager that is passed or a two-way radio that is passed from supervisor to supervisor at shift change? But something that is physically passed that makes those two people have to come together and have to see each other to pass off the whatever the baton would be, so that they're having an opportunity to have some dialogue and say, you know, you don't leave until we have this face-to-face interaction of what's happening. I think that what this person describes is a problem that's not uncommon in firehouses, but it's also a problem that can be very frustrating as you try to go about doing your day's work and find out that there's a lot of things that have happened since your last shift that you're out of the loop about and don't know about and would benefit greatly by having that information. So those are some of the ideas that I have for the person who's challenged with the communications.
Okay, and I guess, you know, what are the pertinent things? You know, you mentioned an automatic alarm 4 times in one night. You know, you don't need to respond crazily to get there when you know there's a good chance of being a false alarm again. Equipment out of service. What about, you know, issues with personnel, you know, with a fellow officer? I mean, although it's not an equipment issue, you know, such and such was not too into being in the fire station today. You know, keep an eye out, or is anybody else like that, or anything like that?
I think that if you have officers that are willing to communicate, and I'm just gonna go with that for the assumption for the moment, Pete, that they're all A players that are interested in good communication between themselves and you know, and want to see their organization run effectively, then I think anything is fair game at shift change that has caused any concern throughout the previous shift. If, you know, you mentioned a personnel issue. Yeah, maybe somebody come in and they were in a really bad mood. You say, you know, this person came in on a callback, and you know, and they were just, you know, wanting to fight with everybody, and I had to just kind of get them and pull them off to the side and say, you know, knock that off, because that's just not good, you know, good behavior. And I just want you to have a heads up in case they come in today and you have this you know, this problem come back again. You know, the one thing about officer communication between officers is it's a lot like communications between parents. You know, if dad only knows something and mom doesn't, it's easy for kids to play mom against dad, or vice versa, dad against mom. If mom and dad are both in the loop, you know, and I have this happen at home, I have one of my kids say, "Dad, can I do this?" And I'll say, "Well, what'd mom say?" "Well, I haven't asked her." "Okay, well, go ask her. Come back. What'd mom say?" "Mom said no, but I want to know what you say." "Well, if mom said no, I said no." You know, and it's not uncommon human behavior to think that if you get an answer of no out of one person, go ask somebody else and see if you can get a yes out of someone else so that you can do what you want to do. The more those officers communicate with each other, the less likely they are to be played against each other by people who are trying to, you know, get yes out of someone for something that they want to do, or get no out of somebody for something that they don't want done. If those officers talk regularly, then they're all on the same page. And I don't think there's anything that I can't think of anything other than maybe a confidential personnel matter that might have to be may remain confidential, that the officers wouldn't see value in sharing. You know, I guess it's the rule of thumb that I would use is anything that benefits the customer on the street and anything that benefits the customer in the firehouse. So that's a pretty broad, sweeping set of guidelines for the kind of information that you would want to share with each other across the shift. How long should it take? Well, depends on, you know, how verbose you are, and you know, if, of course, the day you'd keep a piece of paper in your pocket and say, write little notes about what shift change, here's, you know, I want to make sure they know this and make sure they know this. You might find it, if you made a habit of that, at the time shift change come, you might end up with, you know, six or eight things that you would want the next shift supervisor to know. Where if you depend on your memory throughout the day, things are going to come and go, and you're going to forget things that, you know, something happens at 9 a.m., by 8 a.m. the next morning, it's easy to have forgotten that, especially if you've had a, you know, a busy day. So make a little note of it. You know, the next shift would really benefit from knowing this happened, or you know, that this is going to happen on their shift.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be right here, right back here on Leaders Toolbox on Radio at Firehouse.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hello, and welcome back to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com with Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. Chief, I know you've still been on the road teaching some classes here and there. Where have you been recently, and what's on your agenda for the summer?
Thanks for asking, Pete. In March, I had a couple of interesting weekend opportunities. Got to go to the Upper Ohio Valley Fire School and held at Brook High School in Wellsburg, West Virginia. And I've been affiliated with that school for since its inception. Now I think it's the eighth or ninth year that they run a fire school there, operated by the Hooverson Heights Fire Department. And Robbie and Linda Carroll, Lonnie Riggs, the folks there just do an outstanding job with the regional school. They bring 600 or 700 students in for a weekend of training that ranges from everything from hands-on through leadership, WMD. It's it brings people in from 5 or 6 states, as a matter of fact, into the valley, and really well organized. Got their act together there. Always a good interactive class, and had opportunity to do a leadership program for them, and had a lot of fun. And they're a good host department for fire school. And then I had a chance to go to Bath Township, Ohio, kind of an old stomping ground for where I used to be fire chief before I came to Roseville, and got to work with Jim Paulette and Tim Gimin and doing a leadership program that's sponsored by the IFC at the Bath Fire Department, and had about 40 people from Summit County, Cuyahoga County, Wayne County, and surrounding areas around the Akron, Cleveland, Ohio area. Again, very interactive group, and had a lot of fun. I learned a lot from those folks. They're a very progressive region of the U.S. If you have an opportunity to have some interaction with the people in and around Bath Township, they're doing a lot of really neat things, dual staffing fire stations between multiple fire departments, and just trying some creative ways to better serve the customer. So hats off to the folks at Bath Township and the other attendees that were at that program. Coming up, FRI, obviously in August, I'll be at FRI helping out with the program planning for FRI 2007 in Atlanta, and want to put a plug in for the program there. That's going to be, I think, exceptional opportunity. They started something new this year called a Company Officer Leadership Symposium, and it's an opportunity to have company officers come and get company officer specific related training. So it's very geared to the audience of the up-and-coming company officers and the issues and the challenges that they face. So that's new for FRI and something that we're really looking forward to. So hopefully I'll see some folks there in Atlanta.
Sounds good. Sounds like you're pretty busy. So we're glad to have you to sit down for a few minutes today.
My pleasure.
We have another question for you here. It's from a fellow who's been around to a few different departments, and he's looking for some help and getting things going. Question is, I've served several departments over the past 22 years. Recently, some members of a local fire department asked me to help resolve some problems that have plagued their department for more than 10 years. I have been writing policies, SOPs, or SOGs for the department to help ensure that they are compliant with state and federal laws. I also oversee the training program and conduct the inspections and pre-planning. The chief approved me joining the department, but he has not been very supportive of my work. He has 20 years of fire service experience, but minimal in fire training. He lacks knowledge of fire codes and has limited management experience. Conversely, I am well-trained, very knowledgeable on the codes, and have extensive management experience. Recently, I developed a policy for personnel qualifications. The chief does not meet the minimum qualifications that I've stipulated in the policy. This angered the chief, and now he thinks I'm overstepping my authority. I have dedicated my life to protecting the citizens and the members of the department I have worked for, but I think I'm biting off more than I can chew, and I'm getting tired of the resistance to change I am experiencing. The chief seems very satisfied with the status quo. What do I do? Help.
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind here is you know, what's going on. It sounds like there is this person who's the writer who is not the chief, is serving in he says he joined the department. I don't know if he joined as a firefighter or he's working as a consultant, but at least he's doing administrative type duties. And matter of fact, some would say the duties that might be reserved for the fire chief to either do or at least oversee, writing policies, SOPs, SOGs, depending on the size of the department, you know, maybe the chief would also oversee the training program and the inspections and pre-plan, or it might be something that would be delegated to someone else. But I think what we're dealing with, or what I'm sensing here, is a rub of a power play between this person and the fire chief. And I think it's made worse by the fact that they are individuals with two very different sets of credentials. This writer sums up the fire chief as being under-trained and under-experienced and under-qualified in the management arena to be the fire chief, and then paints himself to be highly qualified, highly experienced, very knowledgeable. When I first heard this one, it made me believe that this person was trying to make a pitch for why he should be the fire chief. And that made me a little bit uneasy to you know, tee this up as a question and the hopes that he might think that I would advance his agenda toward helping him to achieve that goal. I think we have a power struggle here between the person who has the formal power in the organization, and that's the fire chief, and the person who has the informal power, and that is this person who is maybe a subject matter expert that has a lot of years of experience and maybe is respected by the members of his department, who I think he had said asked him to join to help them resolve some problems. Well, if they asked him to join to help resolve some problems, was this before or after the chief was hired? And if it was after the chief was hired, you know, I'm not sure what the intention was, that this person would come in as a consultant or as a member of the department. But there's clearly some power struggle there between the formal power of the chief and the informal power of this self-proclaimed, well-qualified person. I won't dispute it. I'll go with on the surface of what he's saying. But one of the things that he had described that disturbed me was that he had wrote some qualifications for the position of fire chief, of which the fire chief did not meet those qualifications. Well, he didn't offer up what those qualifications were, but I'd be suspect to say to myself, I wonder if he meets those qualifications, and how interesting and convenient it would be if those qualifications were something that he met, but the fire chief didn't. That would leave me and probably others to be suspect of what his motivation is for writing a job description or qualifications for a fire chief, minimum qualifications for a fire chief that the fire chief doesn't meet. What is his motivation here? What good can come from that? He says that the fire chief has called his authority into question, overstepping his bounds. If he didn't involve the fire chief up front in participating in writing these qualifications and talking with the fire chief about how to work through so the fire chief could work toward achieving those qualifications, then I'd say writing those and then publishing them is a sucker punch to the fire chief. And I think he overstepped the line if he did it. And he might say, well, it's the right thing to do because they're the right qualifications. And maybe they are the right qualifications, but it's as much about process as it is about the outcome. And if this guy wrote an SOP that says a fire chief should have XYZ qualifications, and he knew the fire chief didn't, and then he posted and says, you know, this is my recommendation for this policy, how can he expect the fire chief to be anything but angry and disappointed that he would do that? You know, it's a left hook out of nowhere. And there's better and more appropriate ways to work toward helping a department, and I'm going to put that in quotes because I'm curious as to whether he's actually helping or if he's hurting the department. He said something about the department was plagued with problems for more than 10 years. If he's taking this approach, that's certainly not an approach to help a department unplague their problems, unless he's trying to drive the chief out of the organization or create more turmoil. So my advice to this person is to take pause and reflect upon yourself as to whether you're helping or hurting the situation. Because what you describe here, although you think in your heart it's doing the best thing for the department, that you're best serving the community and the interest of the members, I'd say quite the opposite, that your approach to it is not one that's helpful. And I think you need to realize that your role is one to be a resource for the fire chief and to help the fire chief make the department successful. So the fire chief doesn't have a full understanding of codes and limited management experience. And here you are just overflowing with knowledge of codes and all this wealth of management experience. How much have you extended yourself to help the fire chief become a better manager by sharing your experience versus taking shots at him of just, criticizing him for not having management experience? How much have you extended yourself to help the fire chief become better at understanding the codes, or would you rather just be able to say, I'm smarter than the chief at the codes, instead of helping the chief become a better person who knows and is able to enforce the codes? I'm suspect of this writer's motivation, and again, there may be more to this, but on the surface, it doesn't appear as though perhaps his desire to help the department is going to work unless he sees himself as more of a resource and an ally to the fire chief, and helping the fire chief and the organization be better with good intent. And that it doesn't come with writing policies that you post up that's going to leave the fire chief frustrated and angry, and then leaving the writer here also frustrated and angry. I think he said he was getting tired of the resistance to change. Well, duh, your approach to how to bring about changing the organization is contributing to the problem. It's not contributing to the solution. And I would encourage you to try to find ways to be a more positive influence toward change. And the way you do that is mostly through good communication. you know, sitting with the fire chief and saying, what do you think the qualifications should be for the position, and here's what I think they should be, and maybe we can get a third opinion or look at some national standards and come to agreement that whatever those qualifications should be, and then work with the fire chief on an implementation plan as to how he gets to those levels, or the current fire chief is grandfathered in with his existing levels of qualifications, and you know, the next fire chief then has to meet those qualifications. I don't think it's fair to make qualifications and come to the fire chief retrospectively and say, well, we're sorry you've been doing the job, but now we have a new policy that we just put into place that says these are the qualifications and you don't meet them, so you're out. You know, that's just not playing fair. I think this person is a threat to the fire chief, and I think the fire chief is resisting this person's efforts to try to bring about change in this organization. And I think until this person finds a way to approach what he's trying to accomplish in the department in a way that isn't threatening to the fire chief, he isn't going to be able to be successful. He's going to have to find a way to work with the chief to accomplish what the organization needs to have. It also sounds like this person is portraying that he knows what's best for the department more than maybe the chief or others. And I don't remember if it said how long he's been with this department. It made me think a relatively short period of time. And you see this all the time. Somebody comes into a department and they're brand new, and all of a sudden they know a better way to do everything, and without taking the time to learn about the culture and the history and the traditions. And you know, it's not to say that things can't change, but you don't come in and change things instantly. Some things to take, you know, slow, steady, progressive effort over a period of time. And it sounds like he's coming in and trying to say, well, you know, we don't have SOPs and SOGs, so I'll write 30 of them here this year. Well, you're going to overwhelm the organization and overwhelm the fire chief if you try to do that. You know, it's got to be a slow and steady, deliberate introduction of change to get the organization to be able to tolerate that and not capsize the organization in the process. So in summary, my advice to this person is take a deep breath, assess what your motivation is here, have some face time with the fire chief, and figure out how you can work with them. And if you realize you can't work with them, I don't think it's in your best interest to try to continue to tank the fire chief or take shots at their credentials or abilities. This may not be the kind of organization that's just you're gonna be able to affect the kind of change in that you want to, and you might think about backing out of that position of being the one who does that, or get somebody else to help who might be a little less threatening to the chief and the organization. Maybe get some more buy-in from the greater organization build some consensus about what the direction the organization should go and what policies are most important. And but I would say stop trying to invoke your will on the organization in a way that creates this kind of turmoil, because there's just no good to come from it.
Okay. All right, Chief. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this month's The Leader's Toolbox. If you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, please do send them in to podcast@firehouse.com. And we also welcome any suggestions or comments and any questions for Chief Gassaway.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete. And,
thank you.
We'll see everybody again next month.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.